This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, September 20th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have a conversation with a Bahamian. Today, I actually was to have a conversation with Alpheus Hawk Phillinson, but something came up. But whilst I was downstairs, I happened to run into a Bahamian that is living in the United States and say, hey, you want to come on the air? So I'm rearranging to have a conversation with Hawk on Friday. You know, I'm going to carve that out because I want to hear his story and tell his story. So I'm going to do that on Friday. But today I have David Weish, who is used to be a doctor. Are you a doctor?
Dentist. I'm retired.
And pull the mic a little closer. A retired dentist, right, who grew up inside the Bahamas, right? And he's done something extraordinary. First of all, I'd like to say that. Mr. Weech is 80 years old. 80 years young. If you see him, you can see, man, you would doubt his age. You say, man, no, this gentleman got to be 40. But he looks good for his age. And what he did was so extraordinary. I said, no. If you can you pause a little? And so I can have a discussion as to who you are. But before we do all of that, I want to know Mr. Weech's connection to the Bahamas, his tale of growing up in the Bahamas. So I'm going to interview him on that, and so you can understand what is the spectacular thing he did in the United States. But go ahead, Mr. Weech, and introduce yourself again.
Yeah, thanks, Cecil. I appreciate you having me on. It's by surprise, but it's great because I just got off about three or four days ago on a scooter trip, a Vespa scooter, that was around 17,000 plus miles. And when I first got interested in scooters, when I was young here in Nassau, in my teens, a few of my friends on Sunday afternoon used to go down west, Coral Harbor, and we'd circle New Providence. And ever since those days of me doing that, I always wanted it to do as a bucket list is to do the same thing, only circle the United States. So I just finished doing that, and like I say, I piled up about 17,000 miles on a scooter, got to see a lot of places I always wanted to see, and meet some very fantastic people.
And that's good. I'm going to go in detail that. Why would an 80-year-old man go on a scooter trip and brave the elements? Right? But before that, I want to know who you are. You're a Weech. I know Weech is a Bimini Berry Island name, but where did you born? Where did you grow up? What school did you go to?
Yeah, okay. I attended Queens College for just a short while when we moved from Tennessee back to Nassau, and then I went back to Tennessee. There were some subjects that I never took that they have in QC, like religious knowledge and British history, and I decided to go back and finish out high school in Tennessee. But my whole family, both sides, my mother and dad, my dad was born in Current, Eleuthera, and my mother right here in Nassau, and both sides right straight back from when they immigrated from England. They, instead of going via the Carolinas, they came to the Bahamas, and my dad's family settled in Eleuthera, and my mother's from Nassau.
So, and give me their family names so I can relate to them. Your dad is whom?
My dad is Earl Weech, and he was the son of Kenneth and Zetteline Weech, who lived on Kemp Road, just about a block south of where they built Glad Tidings Tabernacle. Mm-hmm. And that's one of about, I'd say, six or eight churches, maybe throughout the Bahamas, that my dad has been the pastor when the church started. He's done some in Freeport. He's got one in Palmetto Point. And actually, I'm here in Nassau to... I just finished attending it the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 60th anniversary of Calvary Bible Church when it was first started in a showroom in Pender's Simonizing thing, I think on Mont Royal or Mont Rose. Mm-hmm. And they had like 432, I think, that one first Sunday night, and it's grown to what you might know what Calvary Bible Church is all about now. It's on Collins Avenue, and they had the 60th Jubilee celebration, and they wanted me and my two sisters to attend. My dad passed away about 35 years ago, and my mother passed away just a few months ago, 2 months shy of 105.
And mom was almost 105.
That's right, and she, I asked her about a month before she died. She still had her mental faculties with her, and I said, Mommy, you know, you're going to be 105 in a few weeks. I thought of anything you might want for your 105th birthday, and immediately she said, yes. I said, what? She said, 106. So she still had her humor right up to her death, and I'm hoping I get her genes rather than my dad's genes. He died at 74, and I've outlived that about 6 years, so... Mm-hmm. So I'm back in Nassau, and I tagged on 2 or 3 days. You know, I'm living with my son who lives here, Jeremy, mm-hmm. and I'm enjoying. I always like coming back to Nassau. I've got so many good friends, and I'm running out of dates for lunches and stuff to meet with people. But I'm doing it like every day, twice a day.
And your mom's family, where are they from? What is their family name?
She was a Knowles. Captain Harry Knowles was her dad, and Sir Durwood Knowles was her brother.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's actually how I got started liking a Vespa. He had one when I was a teenager, and he must have had it wasn't a major accident, but it was enough to upset him. And he said, "Here, you could have this." So he gave it to me, and I knew nothing about mechanics, but I took a big poster board and took that thing every nut and bolt off of it and wrote it down in steps, took it down, put new rings in it, put it back together. The opposite way that I started, and I had it painted, and I just loved that scooter, and I cranked on it once, and it didn't start, but the second crank after I choked it, purred right along, and I just struck up a kind of a likeness for a Vespas, and I bought another one a few weeks ago in Atlanta, and I tried to get somebody to go with me, but I took off on this jaunt, and I just wanted to circumvent the whole lower 48 states. So I started in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I live now, and I drove straight on Interstate 40 to Wrightsville Beach on the Atlantic, and then I turned north, and I didn't know where I was going. I just know that I wanted to stay around the periphery.
I want to go and investigate exactly what you mean you decided to tour the United States. So yeah. You're 80, so I want people to fathom that. Yeah. You're an 80-year-old young man,
yeah.
Right? And you like scooters, and Vespa's a scooter.
Yeah.
And you just say, I'm going to join this group, and I'm going to tour this United States.
Well, I had looked for someone, one person to go with me. Mm-hmm. And
So it wasn't a group? It was just you?
Just me. I couldn't find anybody to go. All my friends are close to my age, and they say, you're crazy. And I think
you're crazy.
The summation of what they thought of me is I didn't have much between each year, mm-hmm. and that's why I just jumped on something like. But I've always been young at heart, mm-hmm. thinking like a seven-year-old. I just thought about that, and I said, yeah, I think I'll do that. That sounds like fun. And then I address whatever hiccups come along the way.
Okay.
So
yeah. let's start. How did you plan your journey? You're in Tennessee now. You're home in your house, and so I'm going to start this tour. I'm going to go by myself.
Yeah.
What did you pack?
Well, at first my thoughts were to just go from Tennessee to the Pacific and back, and that was a pretty good little chunk to bite off. And then I called my good friend Alec Wright, who lives in Toronto, and he's been involved with the Ukraine situation for a long time, trying to raise awareness for the Ukraine refugees. And when I told him what my plans were, then a light went off in his head, and he said, David, he said, why don't we just parallel this this trip of yours, and let's put some stickers on it with a website and with a message, trying to raise awareness. So he said, instead of saying an old man, 80-year-old man, goes to the West Coast and back, let's just juice it up a little bit and say 80-year-old vet. I've been to Vietnam.
You've been to Vietnam, too?
So I identify with the war situation in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just say instead of from Tennessee to the Pacific, just drive up here to Nova Scotia, put your feet in the Atlantic in Nova Scotia. Now you're going from the Atlantic to the mm-hmm. Pacific, and then he added the Gulf. So it was from sea to sea to sea, Atlantic, Pacific, and the Gulf. So when I was coming back, my original plans from San Diego was to come back to Tennessee, but I just wanted to circumnavigate the peripheral side of everything. So I got down and I made a decision to hug against Texas and west coast of Florida, and I went all the way to Key West just to say that I had gone to the periphery of everything. Then I came north up the Atlantic to Riceville Beach to close it down, mm-hmm. because I started to come to Nassau for this celebration and then go back and finish it. But then it would have been two trips because I'm over here for 10 days, but I wanted it to be a continuous trip.
Yeah.
So I went and finished that, closed the loop. Now I fly back to Riceville to pick up my scooter, and I've got about another seven-hour drive back to Knoxville, and then I'm through. But by that time, it'll have well over 17,000 miles on it.
Okay. I'm overwhelmed because I'm a scary person. So the idea that you did this shows your bravery, but now I'm hearing that you went to Vietnam, so I see where the bravery comes in. That's part of you. It's built in you. Right. But in terms of where did you stay at night?
Well, that's the thing about it. I could not afford to stay in a motel or a hotel every night. It just, my billfold is not that deep.
Mm.
My pockets are not that deep.
Oh, okay.
So my friend Alec, he has a lot of connections with his former Navy people. He was in the Navy,
okay.
and former friends. So all through the eastern provinces, he set me up in cities before I got there with his friends.
No, really?
And I mean, and then I had some friends who were along the way, like in Erie, Pennsylvania, a guy I went to college with, mm-hmm. Dick Robinson and his wife Debbie. They set me up. You know, I stayed two nights with them, and so I dipped down into Erie, and then I went back up into Canada and continued west. But my primary thing when I didn't want to lock in on something like a two nights or a night away, because I might be in a place I wanted to have fun, and if I wanted to just really check something out that took more than a day, I wanted that option.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I tried to find hostels, youth hostels, because they're still youth. When I was in university in 65, I took off the summer and I hitchhiked all the way through Europe, everywhere.
So you did things like this before?
Oh, yeah. I've been doing crazy things like this. And so I would go to youth hostels. I was a youth back then, you know, and I had a book, Europe on $5 a Day, and I'd stay in the hostels. And so
I didn't want to interrupt you, yeah. Mr. Weech, but I have no idea what a youth hostel is.
Well, it... That's 10 people,
mm-hmm.
and so everyone was there was doing the same thing. I was, you know, hitchhiking or trying to get, you know, they were from Europe. I met them from everywhere,
okay,
from U.S., Europe, and everywhere. And they're just real inexpensive places to stay, rather than even the cheapest motels. And believe me, I wore Motel 6 and 8s out, and some of them I really had to raise my eyebrows. But you know what? When I got there every night after. I put 550 miles on a scooter in one day, and most of the days were about 300 to 400 miles a day. And I was so tired, I guarantee I got just as much sleep as I would in a Ritz-Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to maximize my places to stay in the hostels or through friends or friends of friends.
I'm impressed that this is even possible. I've heard the term, I'm backtracking through Europe. And I never understood where the people... I always thought they slept in parks or underground railroads or something.
A lot of people had their backpacks in camping, but I've never been one for camping. If there's a mosquito within 5 miles, he's going to be buzzing around me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always stayed... And Europe was full of hostels, and so is they are today, and Canada is. And actually, some of them are very nice,
mm-hmm.
but very, very inexpensive.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, in fact... 90% of them that I went in, they were co-eds, and when I checked in that first one, they were like five guys and five girls, you know, and they were all young teenagers or low 20s, mid-20s, and it got a little bit to get used to that situation, but I learned to live with it.
Okay. And we get our first call, and I'm going to let you put on your earpiece, and
yeah.
I know you're a little hard of hearing, but it's hopefully...
Well, I can hear out of my right ear.
Okay. So we'll patch the caller through and see what they want to speak about. Producer, patch the first caller through. Go ahead. Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Newell. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm talking to Dr. Reach now and talking about his backtracking or scooter trekking throughout the United States.
Dr. Earl Reach?
That's right. He's my dad.
Okay. Well, you know, that church is my church. Why we started that church, my whole family being that. Ended that church. And I know he used to be a pastor a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we used to deal with the stockaders and battalions.
Uh-huh.
And we were camping in Oak, Cabbage Beach, Rose Island, whatever. That Mr. Carl, Similar to Kofi Pinder. I could go back and back with it. I saw going to church. The minute you all bring that a one in there, man, you know, we can go camping. We can play soccer. And we can play softball and basketball. And I'm going to really kill our drive.
Yeah.
And the rest was history. So I ended up in the drunken wheel after that. I teach the drunken. But it's nice to hear your voice, sir.
Yeah, nice to hear you. Good talking with you.
Okay, buddy.
It's good. It's good to know that people recognize your father's name and that it still rings clear. So I'm glad to hear that. Is that another caller there? Yeah, really? Okay, we have another caller there.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, caller.
My pleasure. Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
How you doing today?
I'm to your guest.
Yes, good morning.
Sir, was your father Pastor Earl Weech?
That's right, Earl Weech.
Originally, was at Evangelistic Church.
Exactly, yeah. You know,
and I think there was some problem happened. I was a young boy. I grew up in the Centerville area on East Avenue and North Royal Avenue and Madera Street. And I used to go to Evangelistic Temple. I had some neighbors of mine through the corner. We used to visit one another's churches often. The Seventh-day Adventist Church, St. Thomas More. Ike was from St. George's. Then it was Evangelistic on the western side of Collins Avenue, south side of the hills.
Right.
Your father, Pastor Earl Weech, I think there was a problem there. He allowed, I don't mean to say it like this, he allowed a black girl to join the choir. And they had some problem with that. At that time, that was a predominantly white church.
Yeah.
And then the black girl joined the choir, I think there was some mix up with him and the establishment of the church. And then he moved down and started Calvary Bible Church.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, I just heard that he had left the Bahamas. And I think that's when he went to Tennessee or somewhere.
He went to Tennessee, and he worked in a Dyersburg. That's a little town that we used to live in, Dyersburg Union Mission. And he was just, you know, helping the downtrodden and the people who really needed help with drugs and stuff like that. He was there for a number of years. And then he came back to Nassau for a few years, and then he moved to Winter Haven, Florida. So he's been moving back and forth between Nassau and the States.
Right, and you mentioned Camp Road, Glad Tidings Church upon Camp Road.
Right.
Just about, it was a couple blocks south of the corner of Camp Road and Shirley Street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then my parents were the people that owned a big two-story building on the corner of Camp Road and Shirley Street, Mr. Sam Mins and his family.
Okay.
And I think they had sold the property to the people that owned Glad Tidings.
Yeah.
And then I think Laurel Beach lived south of them.
Yeah. As you're going south on Kemp Road, he was about a block south of the church, right opposite where it used to be a big cottonwood tree.
Right. But this is actually before you reach the break of the hill of Camp Road.
Right, it
right,
is.
Yeah. I know. I remember as a youngster, well, we used to like to go to Evangelist Temple to hear him preach. And then we don't know what happened, but we hear him in this big mix up between him and the establishment. And welcome back home.
Yeah, thank you. It's always good to come back.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your commentary. Is that another caller there, producer? Another one. Everybody knows you. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, talk. Firstly, I'll give you a chance because I need you to tell me, how do I go about doing a similar thing, you know, when you're crossing borders, like from U.S. to Canada, what sort of problems you might have had, particularly when you run across some racist, because I'm a black man, but I want to do the very, very same thing. And then I want you to comment on your longevity. What are you doing currently to live so long? I'm going to hang up and listen because I just want to listen to you. I really enjoy listening to you.
Well, I've always been, for want of a better word, a daredevil, and just doing crazy things. Just last summer, not this past summer, but a year ago, I had a jet ski, and I tried my best to get someone to go with me, but I couldn't. I put that on a trailer, and I trailered it to Sarasota, Florida, put it in the water, and put about 300 miles on it. And then I went to the tributary canals going through to get to the East Coast, but I had to go through Lake Okeechobee. And I got out in the middle. I started with flat water. I got out in the middle within 12, 15 minutes. There was a raging storm, 6-foot waves. And so I knew there were a lot of alligators out there. I just didn't want to be lunch for one of them. So I used too much speed on my jet ski and the apparatus that I built around it to hold extra supplies and batteries and tools and stuff. They're at the bottom of the lake right now, and so I had to kind of forget the rest of the trip up to Montreal, where I'd planned to go all up the East Coast. And people wondered why I was doing that also. But I don't know. I just get these things in my mind about wanting to do some stuff, and I just take off without much planning.
And he wanted to know about the challenges in terms of immigration and passing through borders.
Oh, yeah. Well, going from U.S. to Canada and vice versa, they expect most cases to be in bumper-to-bumper, you know, like parking lot lines. And it's just a hassle to stay in your car that long. One day when I lost my medication, I was in Niagara Falls, the Canada section, and so I had to go to CVS Pharmacy on the U.S. side. And I got lucky. It only took me about, say, 45 minutes to get through. But most of the time, it was a long wait. And once I got there, it's not a problem. They just ask you a couple of questions and just move on.
So you had to produce a passport to show that who you are?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to have your passport, and you have to be updated on the Arrive Can app that shows that you're up to status as far as COVID and everything like that.
Okay. That's good to know. I see I have another caller here. Go ahead, caller. Producer, please pass the caller through. How you doing, caller? Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Hey, this is Tony Davis calling. Wow. Wanted to say, contribute to the trip that Davish took across the country.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Dave and I have been friends for the past 30-plus years, and we've been keeping in touch, and he told me that he was going to plan this trip to go across the United States and up into Canada and back down. I said, but Dave, you're 80 years old now. So he said, yeah, but I can still do this. I can still do this. So we were planning a little trip up in that area. So I made a point to go and see Dave up in Knoxville about a month or so before he left on the trip.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Because I really wanted to talk him out of it.
So did everybody else.
Like a lot of people thought at the time that Dave might be losing his marbles. But I got there and we had a great time together. And he was really had it all planned out really, really well. And he did it. Fantastic. He did it. Just goes to show that, you know, if there's something you really want to do, you put your mind to it, you can do it.
Yeah.
Whether you're 20, 40, 60, or 80.
Yeah, they say, you know, old is just a state of your mind. I think I'm 30 years old, but until I start doing physical things, then I'm quickly reminded.
Yes.
Yeah. But Tony, it was Dr. Davis, Tony Davis, this was really good hearing from you. I talked with you earlier today, and I had at that time had no idea that I was going to be on the radio, but I'm enjoying the conversation here with Cecil, and so look forward to seeing you before I go.
Great, great, great.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate
it. All right, Dave. Take care. Bye.
Okay.
So I want to know, what is the most, I still have food and calls. What is the most memorable part of your trip? Like something that you came across and you said, you sat back and say, wow, if I did not come, I would not have seen that.
If you'd like to make a call.
There are a lot of instances where I can bring up, but one that comes to mind readily, when I was up in the northern region, it's in southern Canada, but the towns were like 35, 40, 45 miles apart. And I didn't have motel reservations in the last town, and it was getting dusk. And I either had to sleep on the ground or the seat of my scooter or whatever, but I had a chance going into the dusk in the darkness, a town 40 miles away. And so when I got about 10 or 12 miles out, I noticed my low gas light was running low, and I saw cars maybe every 5 or 6 or 7 miles, and it was total darkness, no moon, and I was looking for some farmhouse that I could go to change, because I didn't want to change. I had an extra gallon of gas to pour into my regular scooter tank, but I didn't want to stop there because I know there are moose and bears and out there. They're ready to. They're not very friendly, I'm sure. And I didn't have anything to protect myself. So I went up to this house to ask whoever lives there, if I could use the security of their driveway and the light to change my gas. And I walked up to the house about 20 yards from my scooter, and I could see a TV going, but I couldn't see anybody. So I figured somebody was watching TV. But I don't blame him at 9:30 at night why anybody comes to the door during these days and times. So I said, well, I'll go back to my scooter, and I will try to change my gas. And if he tells me to leave, I will leave. But I went on to do that. But I figured if I gave him a buffer of 20 yards, I wouldn't be right in his face. So sure enough, it worked. He came to he opened the door and he said, "Can I help you, sir?" And I told him my situation, and he was so helpful. He came out and held the funnel for me, and that was a scary moment there, because I did not want to be out there in the darkness trying to use the light of my flashlight on one hand, to hold the funnel with my other hand, and I don't know what I'd have held the gas tank with. But that was scary.
Yeah, I that leads me to another question. Besides that, was there any other scary moment of your trek?
Oh, yeah. I kept being warned when I was going into Toronto, stay away from the 401, because it has like 7 or 8 lanes.
Yeah, I'm afraid of the highways in general.
And then the L.A. freeways, but all the big cities, I just jump right on it. And I guess that's, like I say, lack of gray matter between my ears, but I tried always to stay on the right-hand lane in case something happened, like with my tires or something, that I would have a shoulder to exit on. But a lot of times I was caught right in the middle with 2 or 3 lanes on either side, doing 65, 18-wheelers, like 2 feet from me on both. And I got to thinking, I said, you know what? Any little nick of my fender or anything could happen. I just wondered what would happen if something would happen like that. So they were scary moments.
I can imagine. I'm just listening, right? And then picturing. I can't picture myself doing it. So
yeah, when I started out, my mind was to go the scenic routes and the less travel.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, most of them were like one way either way, 2 lanes. And so I learned right away that with the amount of places I wanted to go, I had to go from A to B in many places and I cruised at 70. Mm-hmm. People used to say they let that little scooter on the, but I cruised at 70, and that's the speed limit. And I don't want to, it'll do 90, but I didn't want to do 90 with me on it. So I finally got used to the interstate better than the other way, because the other way, I had oncoming traffic, and I know how people text and they go to sleep, and I had to worry about oncoming cars. And I eventually got more settled in driving on the interstate, even going faster, but we were all going the same direction, and I like that better.
Okay, and I soon have to take a commercial break. And I know you mentioned that you're a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah.
You're the first person I have ever met who actually went to war, and especially Vietnam. So I want to hear about that. Mm-hmm. And then I want to move into the organization Aid for Ukraine and Vets and Families.
Yeah.
But before I do that, and before I go on to the break, right, I want to know about people, the people that you came across traveling. And are people different in every state and in Canada? How you felt engaging with them? Because me personally, I'm a scary person, right? And I could see me backtracking and doing the scooter thing, but I'm a little concerned about making people uncomfortable seeing me, and you seem to be comfortable with it.
I've never had a problem. I've never known a stranger, and I'm glad you asked that about the differences in people. You know what, Cecil, I learned through this trip, and I guess if I had to pick one part that I like best of all, is that meeting new people in an environment that they don't know my background, mm-hmm. they don't know my political beliefs, mm-hmm. they don't know anything about me. And when people are like that, mm-hmm. they are all 100% totally friendly to you.
Really?
I mean, I never met a person that I saw a negative quality in them. It's just the fact that the world is, if they could only get in that situation, the world is where it is now because we grow up in a certain way in thinking, and a lot of people go and see the other parts of the world and see how other cultures live and appreciate. But when you're so insular and don't do anything, everything you pick up to read, you read to enforce what you believe, and you just lose the fact that other people are in this world. And the fact that I met everybody and they were so friendly, it was so impressive.
Okay, I have two texts, and then we can go into Vietnam, right? And the first text says, great show as usual. Tell your guests, do not take a scooter drive in Nassau because the people in Nassau can't drive. So let you know, you can drive in the United States, but don't try that here.
I want to tell you, before you read that other text, before I forget it, and I do that a lot lately, I'm having senior moment, but I told my sisters, when I got here and got my son's car and drove up east to be with some family to eat, 17,000 miles of driving was pretty scary, but I have yet to be as scared as I was coming from west to east on Wolf Road. I mean, people jumping in front of me, yes. I thought they were going
to
scrape the paint off my car. They were so
drive
close.
Other people.
And no blinkers and stuff. I actually was more scared on Wolf Road than I had been in the L.A. freeways.
How did you manage going around a roundabout?
Well, I've never had problems with them. I love roundabouts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I think I understand totally, you know, the lane, prominence or whatever the lane you need to be in if you want to go the second pull off or the first or whatever. But I love roundabouts. Stopping the red lights when there's no cars coming just never has made much sense to me.
I appreciate you do understand roundabouts because many Bahamians don't.
I know.
You just look and shake your head and say, you're supposed to be going straight.
Yeah.
And the last text here basically said, did you know that Kathmandu, that was popular for hikers in Europe in those days? And so that was, we want to make that point. So that's interesting. But I want to talk Vietnam. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And like I said, you're the first Vietnam veteran that I've ever come across.
Yeah.
You know, I think I thought it was a different generation, far removed.
Yeah.
So to have you here, I'd be remiss not to ask you a question on how did it impact you as a Bohemian American, right? Impact persons who was there with you. Mm-hmm. What you think about wars in general, right? Especially sending people's sons to say, okay, we got to defend freedom, right? Mm-hmm. I want that type of commentary. And then we can move on to the Ukraine.
Yeah, well, Vietnam was a year in my life that I...
So you spent a year there.
Yeah, I spent a year there. And I have some good memories. I met some really good friends over there. But to tell you the truth, when I was drafted out of college...
You were drafted. This is new things. Go ahead.
I was drafted for 2 years, and they say if you go regular Army, which means you add a third year, they will give you your MOS, like Military Occupational Specialty. So they told me that, and I told them from right out of college, my hopes were to go to dental school. So since I was drafted anyway, I upped for the third year so I could be assured of getting the dental corps. And so I went into Vietnam after being trained as a dental assistant and a dental hygienist. And I might as well tell you, probably the Army doesn't want me to say this, but anyway, you can't do it over here. But while I was over there, I was assisting an oral surgeon, Captain Crossan from Texas. I'll never forget him. But I was his assistant, but he was over my shoulder guiding me, but he would let me do unbelievable procedures, pretty complicated extractions and impactions and everything. Mm-hmm. So when I did go to dental school after the Army, when we went through the surgery rotation, I was almost like an instructor.
You're in advance.
Yeah, and so I tell people, my son, well, he really didn't ask me, but everybody always say, son, what do you do in the war, Daddy? And I say, well, I kept up the biting strength, not the fighting strength. Because, you know, if a soldier got a toothache, he ain't gonna fight too much.
No. No. So did you see any action in Vietnam?
You know, the guys that went out on the front lines, I gotta give them my handshake. I don't know how they did it. And you asked me about action. I did see action, but it was in a situation like oncoming mortars. And I remember one night we would hear them in the distance, and they would usually walk them up about 50 or 100 yards, and as they get louder, we had enough time to just run to the bunker, let them do their thing, and then when the dust settled, come back out. Well, one night when this happened, I just grabbed my weapon, my steel pot or my helmet, and my ammo, and all my clothes in my hand, in my boots and everything in my hand, and you're supposed to go to the bunker, dress, and be ready. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the way the Army did, but that was the way Dave Weech did it. Mm-hmm. And so I went in there, and found out that I had left a friend of mine that only had 2 weeks to go before he rotated back to the States.
Okay.
And while he's sitting on the bunk, lacing up his shoes, shrapnel ripped through the tent and took him out.
Wow.
And so the next morning, the colonel, the CO, called me in his office and says, Private Weech says, you know what you did, you know, and he dressed me down. And I just told him, because, you know, what's the worst they could do? Send me to Vietnam? I'm already there.
You're already there, yeah.
And so I said, sir, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but if that happens tomorrow night, I will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one night that I was running in the dark and like that, I had forgot. You're supposed to go down a concrete path and take a left angle or a right angle that leads to the bunker. And then I forgot about the interlacing guy wires that were holding the tents up. So I'm trying to cut off some distance to save some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm running full speed. And then all of a sudden in the darkness, one of these guy wires caught my right shin. And I've got a scar in it right now where it just raked the skin right down to the white bone. And this is what gets me to Vietnam. They were having President Johnson to come over there to address the troops,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to give out Purple Hearts, you mm-hmm. know, just to be impressive. They came to me and offered me a Purple Heart for that. And I said, this is so ridiculous. It's cheapening the medal where people who really deserve it, and then you come to me because of a mistake, a stupid mistake I made, and you want to give me a Purple Heart?
Mm.
Like, get out of my face.
Mm.
And so all that kind of stuff, I never really wanted to go to Vietnam. I didn't really believe in the war, and I came so close to going with a friend either to Canada or Mexico. And then I reevaluated, and I said, you know what, all my friends and family, it'd be so bad coming back, so I decided to just go on and go and do my duty. And that's.
And you spent your 3 years.
I was 3 years in the Army, but only 1 year in Vietnam.
Okay.
The rotations were 1 year, but people could choose to re-up for another year,
mm-hmm.
but not me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you ever went back to the country Vietnam.
I would like to.
But what you thought about it then? And Devin, give me a reason why would you like to?
Well, I would like to because I hear so many people who have been. It's really a nice country to visit now. But when I went, I had 3 R&Rs, rest and recuperation.
Mm-hmm.
You're only supposed to get 2. I went on my first one, and I went to apply for the second one, and the person at the desk says, well, since you haven't been anywhere yet, where would you like to go? Thinking it was my first one.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't tell them about my first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't lying. I just didn't let them know. So I ended up getting 3. So whenever we would go from my place in the Central Highlands down to Saigon, they would put us in a hotel. And all I saw of the cities and stuff like that outside of the little village where I was stationed, at the top of the hotel, they'd have a swimming pool. But they would have a chain link fence about 20 feet high and cross all the top to prevent people from throwing grenades up on the roof. And so that's the kind of situation that I knew in Vietnam. So that's not what's wanting me to go back. But I understand, you know, all the dust settled and it's really a nice place, friendly people, and it's a nice place to visit. It's a quasi bucket list of mine. I don't mm-hmm. know if I'll make that one or not.
No, but for sure, I'm sure you go backpacking and scooter riding to Vietnam soon. I can see it. I can see it.
Well, that's an idea.
But an initial of the show, you mentioned your friend Wright, if I remember.
Alec Wright.
Alec Wright.
Yeah.
And he helped you plan your tour.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to bring attention to aiding military and Ukrainian vets. And yeah. I want to know more about that because I know I'm explaining it wrongly,
yeah.
but I'll let you do that in your own words,
yeah.
exactly what you and your friend are trying to do.
Yeah. Well, Alec is very, very organized, and he has a lot of former people in the Navy that he was in. And he had been working toward this situation before. So when I called him and told him that I was going on the scooter, that's when he suggested that I would parallel it with the Ukraine situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make this point that the money that we're raising is not going to the military. It's going to the families, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers of the husbands, the sons, and whatever, who are currently fighting. And one of the biggest setbacks to getting this website up was we really couldn't come across some place that people could feel good about giving their money with all the fraudulent activities and the money's not getting to where they say it's going.
Mm-hmm.
We finally found a small Ukrainian church, all Ukrainians, and the Ukrainian pastor. And I don't know how Alec found him, but we went over there one morning. And so now the money is being funneled into the priest there at the church in Niagara Falls, Canadian side. And he will give and has all the records and digitized, and you can check anytime through computer records. He will give you a receipt, and then when he sends that money to the people, the families, not the military, but the families to buy household things, food and stuff, they in turn give receipts to where that money goes and comes back and is tabulated to where you can check it.
And check and balances.
So when we found out that it was doing that, we felt really good about asking people to donate. It never did come through me, and I didn't want it to because, you know, people would say, well, this guy's out on a flaunt, and he's wanted his trip paid for. That's not the way it happened. I don't even know how much has come through, but it doesn't go through me. It goes straight through the priest there at Niagara Falls.
Do you happen to remember the name of the priest or the church?
You know, Alec has mentioned that a couple times, mm-hmm. but I can't, as you ask me now, I can't remember his name. I think his first name is Victor,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know his last name.
And you said the church is on the Niagara Falls, off the Niagara Falls on the Canadian side.
Yeah, and this card that I gave you, mm-hmm. Alec had some cards made up, and it has that the website is Scoot for scooter, and then to make it short, they had the numeral 4, and then Scoot for UKE, which stands for Ukraine, .org. And so that website, Scoot for Uke, .org, is the place where it's all funneled through, and it'll go through that priest in that Catholic church and then on to the families that deserve it.
Okay. Well, let me give that website again. That's Scoot, S-C-O-O-T, number 4, U-K-E, .org. Right, and I can go to this website, and what would I see there?
Well, they have some buttons that you can see a little bit of my biography or whatever I've done a little bit in life, and it has a button, of course, if you want to donate,
mm-hmm.
and some more about them, and if you want to learn about them. Alec found two really exceptional. I think University of Toronto. They mm-hmm. were in university, and they were really, really intelligent, and they were heavy into IT and everything. So they, on their own, all these people are doing it on their own, and they set up the website. And it was a while before it got running because, like I said, they really wanted to be sure to make people comfortable about knowing that the money is going where it's promised.
Okay. And I have one more question. I go back to the caller. Right, because I have 6 more minutes leave before the show ends. What is one lesson or principle that you would teach or tell someone about, mention it to them? Life lesson.
You know, I'm so concerned about how people get along with each other. And it has always bothered me how people just get so far apart. And this whole world, it seems to be, I know I heard similar things when I was young, but it just seems to be widening the gap between people of different races and backgrounds and stuff like that. I'll never see it in my lifetime. We've come so far. When I was a young kid, but we've got miles and miles to go. So, you know, it just boils down to this, Cecil. One thing I try to live by, and I would like to see everybody live by, is the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Simple as that.
And it seems that it works for you. The idea that your friends and family were able to reach out to other veterans
yeah.
to say that they have a friend and the veterans understand
yeah.
and embrace you to say, I'll make my home open to you. That says wonders.
And when I stayed with them, you know, I was a stranger and I couldn't thank them enough, but they... More than once, more than a few times, they would tell me right before I left, said, Dave, we like what you're doing so much, and I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I'm just trying to bring across the point how nice these people were to me. I never had anything negative at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
And, Alexa, we're about to conclude, and I see my caller hung up, right? I want you to give some shout-outs to people who you want to let out there, especially Bahamians who you may not see whilst you're here home, like people you may have went to school with or anything. I just mentioned.
Yeah, there's so many people here that I would like to see. I've seen a lot, but, you know, my buddy Gary Miller, he's a videographer here, and I always try to get to see him. We talked this morning, mm-hmm. and I probably will. If he's listening, he better make it where I can see him.
I hear that Bahamian accent again. Gary,
I started to say, I love the Bahamian accent. You know, people were asking me about me up in Nova Scotia, and all those islands were so nice and all that stuff, and I'm riding on the scooter, and in my mind, I'm thinking that, you know, Bahamian. You know, mm-hmm. I say, yeah, man, I've been all up in them island, babe.
That's good. Okay, let me quickly get this caller through, because I know we soon have to hang him. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Mr. Reed, too many to call back. I wanted to ask Mr. Reed. Uh-huh. I've been watching this war, and I watch a lot of BBC. What are they really fighting for in Ukraine? I've seen a lot of people get bombed and killed. Is it all over oil or land? But what are they really fighting for?
Hey, thank you very much, Sparky. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, I am the wrong person to ask that. I know that's not a good answer for you, but I'm a person who knows my limitations and what I know about a subject. I honestly don't know, and I'm sure, you know, the old expression is there are two sides of one coin. I've heard a lot on both sides. All I know that the people that I'm concerned about, they were living a decent life with families and homes and aspirations. Now they've just been blown out of existence, and many of them totally out of existence. They're dead. And so I don't get into the reasons, because I really don't know the reasons. It's just that I don't understand what goes on at that kind of power level, and I don't think anybody in my situation will ever know. I just think this world is run by some people that people like us will never really know exactly what's going on.
And I would like to thank you for agreeing to be on the show with me, especially last minute, right?
Yeah.
Just overhearing a conversation and say, hey, do you care to be my guest for the day? But this was, I mean, having a conversation with a retired dentist, Dr. David E. Weech, who was doing a tour of the United States, Scooter Dave Riding Salva. And you have a website, scootforuke.org, that you go and see his exploits and also makes donation. But I give the last 2 minutes for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, just quickly, Slava, S-L-A-V-A, was given the name by my friend Alec because Slava in Ukraine means holy and or hope. And so that's why he asked me to name it that. But out there in Radio Land, I hope what I've said has opened up some people's eyes to where you feel led to give to help the Ukraine refugee situation. And know, I am totally convinced that your money will get, every dollar will get where it's supposed to go. There was a company that approached us. They wanted 5%. We turned it down because if it's a lot that comes in, we don't know where that 5% is going. Every cent of this dollar is going to Ukraine. And thank you very much for listening.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is Guide and Reading AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day. We see you tomorrow.